Welcome to A Global Focus with this evening's guest, L.A. Marzulli, author, researcher, and lecturer. L.A.'s website can be found at lamarzulli.net. Everyone, great Friday evening. Trish Sheridan, host of A Global Focus. Our guest this evening is L.A. Marzulli with website lamarzulli.net. A Global Focus broadcast live on the International UFO Paranormal Radio Network with anchor station UPRN 105.7 FM New Orleans. Thanks to Joe Montaldo, UPRN network owner, for making these broadcasts possible. Appreciate it, Joe. Wow, this evening's guest is L.A. Marzulli, author, researcher, and lecturer. L.A.'s website again at lamarzulli.net. L.A. Marzulli is the author of the Nephilim Trilogy. Marzulli received an honorary doctorate from Pacific International University for his work on the Nephilim Trilogy. Marzulli is also the author of the nonfiction work Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. This book presents an expose of how the current political landscape may bring about ancient biblical prophecies, which then may trigger supernatural events foretold in the Book of Daniel and Revelation. L.A. Marzulli's book, The Alien Interviews, features 17 personal, intense interviews with people who have been directly involved in UFO phenomena. The Alien Interviews book was written for the skeptic with various world views presented as to what this phenomena may be. Marzulli teamed up with film producer Richard Shaw to create the Watcher series. Watchers 1, UFOs are real, burgeoning, and not going away, is in its fifth printing. Watchers 2, Signs in the Heavens and Earth, offers a biblical answer to the off-the-charts weather and earth changes activity and political developments that we're experiencing. Recently, Shaw and Marzulli completed Watchers 3, Fingerprints of the Supernatural, which covers the two sun phenomena, the Arab Spring, the Shroud of Turin, and the Torah Codes. Marzulli's latest book, The Cosmic Chess Match, was released in the fall of 2011. The book covers the ongoing cosmic battle that has been waged in an unseen dimension for millennia, and according to Marzulli, is about to spill over into our dimension soon. Marzulli has presented his exhaustive research at conferences and churches, as well as appearances and interviews on numerous national radio and television programs. L.A., for being a return program guest this evening, the current world developments powerfully segue into your research findings.
Well, Patrice, thanks so much for having me on. It's always a pleasure to be here. And just thanks for the opportunity to share what's going on with your guests, or with your audience, sorry.
Very much appreciated. Now, L.A., your most recent book, Cosmic Chess Match, and your articles note that the Arab Spring served as a further catalyst in intensifying Mideast tensions and the danger to Israel. Your book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, observes that the contemporary political scenario is intricately related to past supernatural events and to prophetic text. Lots of interesting articles. Right off the bat, your article from today, you believe that indicators from Iran remain very threatening as to possible new developments.
Absolutely. I mean, Iran is, and before we get into this, the blog today, which is lamarzulli.wordpress.com, the blog today talked about the Iranians and Islam in general is based on a set of supernatural events. Israel and the Judeo-Christian West is based on another set of supernatural events. And that's really the essence of what's going on here. And it's never talked about in the media. You know, they talk about sectarian violence. Well, you know, this is, go to the root of the cause. The root of the cause is the Israelis believe in one set of supernatural events that have happened, and Christians sort of piggybacked onto that with the advent of the Messiah, who we believe is the Messiah, Yeshua, Jesus, which then continues those supernatural events, and we've got Christianity and Judaism. Islam is based on a third set of supernatural events, much later. And this is why the tension, this is why the loggerheads. And in the Hadith, which is a commentary on the Quran, there are verses that specifically talk about, and I blogged on this a couple of days ago. I'm not making this stuff up. Do your own research and see if I'm wrong. And they are talking about, in their eschatology, in their scenario of end times, last times events, that a Jew will be hiding behind a tree, and the tree will cry out, "Oh, Muslim, come and kill the Jew behind me." And the quotes I wrote today, and just go back a couple of weeks to Egypt at a game, I blogged on this. I mean, it's 1938, and anti-Semitism is rearing once again its ugly head in ways that I have never seen it. But the Egyptians get together at a soccer game, and they unfurl this very large banner at halftime, I assume at halftime, and it says, "One nation under a new Holocaust." I mean, if that doesn't appall every American, if that doesn't set your teeth on edge and the hair on the back of your neck, you know, stand up at attention, there's something wrong with you. Because, I mean, this is, it's not like it was in World War II, where all the death camps were under the radar, no one knew about them, or very few people were aware of them. You know, information sort of leaked out, and at the end of the war, obviously, big surprise, hello. This is blatant. This is like people at a soccer game, "One nation under a new Holocaust." When you've got Khomeini stating openly that anyone who wants to attack the Zionist regime, we're right behind him. War is coming in the Middle East. There's no doubt in my mind that it's coming. It's been prophesied for thousands of years. I believe it is World War III. It is not Armageddon. People misunderstand that. But it's going to happen. It's going to take place. It is a prophecy by a prophet written 2,600 years ago, Ezekiel, okay? And he wrote down exactly what we are seeing today. And it's, you know, people talk about Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce and Blossom Goodchild and all these so-called prophets, but their accuracy rate is dreadful, 60 to 70%. Well, when we look at the prophecies from the Guidebook of the Supernatural, what I call the Guidebook of the Supernatural, these things are 100% accurate 100% of the time, which begs the question, who is the author of these, and how come whoever this author is, he knows with greater accuracy than anybody else, in fact, 100% accuracy. What we see, which is alarming to me, is that Russia, the country which is named first in this prophecy, is saying that you attack Tehran, speaking to the West, the United States in particular, if Iran is attacked, Tehran, Iran is attacked, it's like attacking Moscow, Russia. So there's a correlation there which you've never seen before. Russia, again this week, said, you come in and try a regime change in Syria, that's a red line, can't do that, can't cross that line. So they're backing Syria and Iran. And these countries, specifically Russia and Persia, which of course is modern-day Iran, are the nations mentioned in the prophecy. It's all here. And this takes place, it says very specifically in that prophecy. I mean, here's another marker. It says, in the latter days, when children of Israel are regathered from the four corners of the earth and reestablished in their ancient homeland. That is precisely what happened in 1948, and for 2,000 years of diaspora, we are here. And yet more people know about 2012 and the Mayan calendar and the supposed stuff that's supposed to happen on December 21st than they do about this prophecy, which is affecting us right now as we speak. It's here. It's coming.
Yes, the scenario is getting very serious, and I wanted to mention an article here that just recently appeared in the UK Guardian, but before that, did I remember correctly, or I'm probably paraphrasing here, unfortunately, that Ayatollah Khomeini described the Jews as the embodiment of filth?
Yeah.
That's totally unacceptable, and it's totally beyond rational thinking.
Yes, it is.
One thing I thought was fascinating was there's an article in the UK Guardian at website www.guardian.co.uk. This Guardian article was written by Harriet Sherwood, she being their the journalist, the Guardian's Jerusalem correspondent. Ms. Sherwood noted two really interesting commentaries. One was from someone considered a very moderate Israeli, Benny Gantz, who is the chief there in Israel, and also, of course, Yehud Barak. Now, it is quoted, Benny Gantz, Israel's military chief of staff, is saying that, quote, Israel must exploit its offensive capabilities in the battle against its enemies and Also, subquote here, adapt our patterns of operation, subquote, to contend with new challenges, end quote. Also, Israel's Defense Minister Ehud Barak is saying, quote, we must not waste time on this matter. The Iranians continue to advance, identifying every crack and squeezing through. Time is urgently running out, end quote. And, you know, I love your books there, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, also the Cosmic Chess Match. And there's one other book here I'd like to reference, and that is because the scenario here really seems a bit similar in this stalemate here with the Israelis, Iranians, and Russia. The Tehran Initiative by Joel C. Rosenberg is on the bestseller list as well. Yours is also very popular. Boy, these scenarios seem to be coming to the front, and who would have thought it? But then again, they're in Scripture.
Well, they are. Look, everything's playing out. It's like for those of us who have traveled in this for some of us decades, and waited and watched you know diligently, we are alarmed at what we see. And that's an understatement. The Middle East has a supernatural component to it. In other words, the Arab Spring that we are seeing now, in my opinion, has a supernatural component to it. This Khomeini called the Jews the embodiment of filth. How does one man who's born an innocent child who has nothing in the memory banks, as it were, right? How does he, at a 60-year-old or 70-year-old, come up with a statement like that, that the Jews are the embodiment of filth? How is it that Hitler is able to say basically the same thing and dehumanize the Jew? There's a supernatural component. And in my opinion, what this is, the Jews are God's chosen people. And I'm not making this up. If you've got an issue with that, take it up with the Torah. Take it up with the first five books of Moses. That's the biblical mandate that we've heard. Now, that's his words, not mine. They are the chosen people. What we're seeing now is that for 2,000 years of diaspora, the Jews being gathered back into this ancient homeland, if there are dark supernatural forces at work, and there are, and I get into all this in the Cosmic Chess Match, that the fallen one who... You know, when I say fallen angel, or say Satan, people conjure up these images in their mind of what they think he is. And what they don't understand, what most people don't get, is that this battle has been taking place in an unseen dimension, literally for millennia. And in many cases, and oftentimes throughout history, it has been spilling over into this dimension. Certainly it did so in World War II. In my opinion, the Holocaust was nothing more than I shouldn't say it that way. The Holocaust was a satanic ritualistic sacrifice. The bodies were stacked like cordwood and burned. That's what they were. It was a satanic ritualistic sacrifice. Does that mean that the people working in the concentration camps knew what they were doing? Not everyone did, but certainly some did. Many did. And they carried this out with precision, military precision. It's horrific when one begins to look at what happened in the Holocaust. But there's a reason for it. And people might not understand this, but in my opinion, the reason is this. A fallen one knew that if he could wipe every Jew out on the planet, the prophecy that we're talking about now would not come to pass. The Most High God would be a liar. Therefore, you can't trust him. And people go, why doesn't God stop it? Well, he is going to stop it. The carnage on this planet has been going on for thousands and thousands of years and continues. But it is coming to an end. I truly believe it's coming to an end. I don't know when that end is, but I think the haunters are here that this system that we have been under since recorded history, this inhumanity of man, one man towards another, the killing fields, the barbarity, of one nation against another nation. The genocide, certainly in this country with the American First Nation people, the American Indians, First Nation people, certainly slavery. All of this can be traced to, in my opinion, to the handiwork of the fallen one who comes to rob, to kill, and to destroy. Once again, he has raised his ugly specter of anti-Semitism. Why the Jew? Because we're getting ready for the 7 years, which is called the time of Jacob's trouble. Not Bob Fred or Ernie's. It's Jacob. And Jacob is Israel. And it's a Jewish thing. And there's one, in order to really get into that, it takes a while to really get the background. Most people know this as the tribulation period. But that's what's coming upon this earth. And it has to do with the nation Israel. And they will look on him whom they have pierced and will mourn for him as an only son. That's a prophecy. That's from Isaiah. I'm not making that stuff up. They, who's they? The collective nation of Israel will look on him whom they have pierced. Who's the one that the nation of Israel pierced? The Messiah, Yeshua. And they will mourn for him as an only son. They will finally come to realize. And here's where it's going. I've been talking about Islam tonight and talking about two different sets of supernatural paradigms, and there are. But there's reconciliation, and reconciliation is going to be amazing. And I'll tell you why. Here's a perfect example. There's a rabbi who's a messianic rabbi, which means he was born Jewish, he became a rabbi, and then converted to Christianity. So he's what you would call, actually, he didn't convert to Christianity. Let me correct myself here. He accepted the Messiah. He's still a Jew. You don't convert, you just accept the Messiah. He's a Jew. So he continues with the feasts and everything that the Jews do, except he recognizes his Messiah. So he's not a Christian, he's a messianic Jew, is what you would call him. And he was speaking at a conference, and I'm going to throw this up on my blog one of these days, very, very soon. And along with him at this conference was a Muslim who was in this country for one reason and one reason only. He was a sleeper cell, the head of a sleeper cell that was going to cause mayhem and destruction in this country. That's what he was sent over here to do. And before he was able to organize his cell and do all this dastardly deeds that he had planned, Yeshua, Jesus, appeared to him in a dream. And this man saw it. He was obviously freaked out, didn't know what was going on. It was very real. In fact, you could even say Jesus appeared to him. It wasn't a dream. It was like a real encounter. And this man converted to Christianity. Obviously, when you do that from the Islamic religion, there's usually a death sentence on you. You can't do that. Once you're a Muslim for life. And if you recant or fall away from your faith, then they will kill you. So this man, needless to say, has bodyguards and has to be careful of what he does. He's in the United States. So this messianic rabbi is preaching and talking on stages like thousands of people. This is unscripted, unrehearsed. The Muslim terrorist who was also speaking at that conference walks onto the platform, and you know everybody's kind of going, what's this? What's going on? And he cries out, "Forgive us, O Israel! Forgive us, O Israel!" Like this, and he begins to, you know, he drops to his knees in front of the rabbi, saying, "Forgive us." The rabbi drops to his knees and they embrace. The audience goes absolutely bananas. The people on the platform are all weeping. Everyone's crying and weeping. And then the Muslim, who's still on his knees, right, the former Muslim, goes, "Rise up, O Israel! Rise up, O Israel!" And he helps the rabbi to stand to his feet. The whole crowd goes absolutely ballistic, totally ballistic. There's weeping, there's applause, there's tears of joy, and it's a harbinger of what is coming on this planet when Messiah returns. That's what we're going to look at. All this stuff that we see now, all this tension will be finally eradicated. They will look on him whom they have pierced and mourn for him as an only son. And I believe many Muslims will understand who Isa, who they call Jesus, who Esau really was, that he wasn't just a prophet. There was something else here. That's my take on it.
Very interesting information. And you know, L.A., I was very intrigued by what your Watchers 2 and 3 material. I could only see a segment of it, but what I saw I thought was very interesting.
Thank you, Patrice.
For example, on the use of the Torah code, you were actually contacted by, I believe, an Orthodox rabbi, Matyahu Glazerson from Jerusalem, and he was saying that in the Torah code itself, I guess I describe it as a mathematical formula, I'm sure you could better give the explanation, that there are references to not only the horror of the 9/11 event, and there's one phrase. Oh darn! I hope I can bring this up. But in the phrase, it's noting that cursed be Bin Laden,
yes.
And the revenge would be the Messiah's. It would be the Messiah's, the Messiah's duty, or revenge shall be by the Messiah. for what mm-hmm. bin Laden did. That was very intriguing. Also, the Torah Code references 2011 in the year 5771. Lunar anomalies will be observed. And here, you've also compared this statement to the report by Lorenzo Lorio from Cornell University mm-hmm. On, I believe, the title of his paper, on the anomalous secular increase in the eccentricity of the orbit of the moon, end mm-hmm. quote. Also, what I thought was cool was Stan Gordon. Well, no, I thought this was really interesting. Stan Gordon, a screenplay writer, living, I believe, in America's West. It looked as though he were speaking from the West. And he's a captain yes. in the Israeli reserves. He mentioned that even the Mumbai massacre was noted in the Torah Code. Terrorist, I think the word killing, I'm not sure on the second. Mm-hmm. That's remarkable.
It's absolutely remarkable. Richard Shaw, my good friend and co-producer, we do all these ourselves. It's just a two-man team, believe it or not. There's no one else doing it. It's just, you know, it's just Richard and myself, and it's a labor of love, needless to say. In fact, today we were speaking to an author by the name of Doug Hamp. We did an Israeli update, and also we did an update on the Nephilim and UFOs, which is just fascinating. That will be in Watchers 4, which will be out in about 3 or 4 months, the rate we're going. And Monday we're interviewing Dr. Roger Lear again on more about the implants and other UFO-related abduction phenomena that we're going to talk about with Dr. Lear on Monday. But the Torah codes are fascinating because I actually sat down with Rabbi Glazerson a while back, and I asked him, I said, you know, in the Tanakh, the books of the Bible, the Hebrew Bible, so what the Christians would call the Old Testament, there's a reference to something extremely supernatural, which is called the ephod. And the ephod was a vestment, a vest, essentially, that the high priest would wear. And embedded in that, on that vest were 12 stones. And the 12 stones were all different colors and different types of stones, like you know, sapphires and that type of thing. And on the stones were the letters of the Hebrew alphabet. And the stones were embedded in the ephod. And the high priest would ask a question, and the stones would light up. Now, that's crazy. I mean, just hear what I'm saying. That's crazy stuff. I mean, that's so supernatural, it's off the charts. I mean, it really is. But it's there, and it's something that happened thousands of years ago, and it's lost, gone. The ephod's gone. No one knows where it went. When the Babylonians came in about 400 years B.C., destroyed everything, all the vessels, all that stuff. They may be hidden someplace, which, you know, we're getting artifacts. Some of those things have been found. Perhaps the ephod will be found. We don't know. But it's out of history. So I proposed to Rabbi Glazerson, I said, what if the Torah codes, now that we've got the advent of the computer, are a type of modern ephod? And we covered this in his answer, in fact, in Watchers 4. That was a dinner. We were eating dinner when all this came out, and he got all excited. I got all excited. We were talking, and so several weeks later, he flew back to Los Angeles, and we interviewed him again, and that was one of the questions that we talked about. Is the Torah code some sort of, perhaps, like a modern ephod because of the computer? Weissmandel, who was sort of the father of the modern Torah codes, counted all these. He actually took the book of Esther and counted every letter by hand because there's no computer back then. This is like in the 40s, okay? And he's counting every letter by hand. And he came up with some astounding discoveries from that. And from Weissmandel's work, then it becomes, with the computer, it becomes not letter counting anymore by hand. Now it becomes the computer's able to do this. One of the simplest ones is Torah 101, we call it. If you take the book of Genesis and you skip 50 letters, it spells Torah. That's what it spells. Okay? Mm-hmm. If you go to the last book of the Torah, which is Deuteronomy, and yeah, it's 49 letters and it spells Torah. Okay? When you go from Genesis to Exodus, It's you still get 50 letters. Numbers, it's slightly different, but when you get into Leviticus, which is between midway through the Torah, it's every 8 letters and it spells the name Hashem.
Oh,
that's not coincidental. that's not just, in other words, someone has so crafted this that it's beyond anything a human being can do. It's on so many different levels, and even the rabbis will tell you that they've only scratched the surface of what that all the knowledge. The rabbis used to say this, like Maimonides and other rabbis would say this all throughout history, that the entire sum of the world's knowledge is contained in the Torah. And you know that sounds like that's nice. I'm glad you think so, and let's move on, right? But now with the Torah codes, we're realizing that there are codes within codes within codes that are in, and some of these things are in the plane. In other words, when you mentioned the 9/11 deal, in that very complex, tight matrix of words is also 3,000 dead is in the plain text.
Wow.
In other words, from the Torah itself, and 3,000 died that day. That's from when the ground opens up, you know, Dathan and the golden calf and all that, the ground opens up and swallows, and about 3,000 died that day. That's right in the plain text, right, of the 9/11 code. I mean, that's just bizarre to see that, and yet it's there.
I thought, too, it was very powerful that they actually named that the Torah code, the sequence actually named Bin Laden. That was very important, I thought.
I agree.
And at this point, you know, I'm wondering if we could take a slight turn of conversation. I wanted to reference this, L.A., because the passing occurred just this past week. I just wanted here to note, I know you would probably have so much more information on him. I heard this brilliant person just twice. David Flynn. What a wonderful author, researcher, lecturer, real Renaissance-type, brilliant mathematician,
yes,
and archaeologist. Yes. David wrote the book Cydonia, The Secret Chronicles of Mars, and Temple at the Center of Time, Newton's Bible Codex, finally deciphered in the year 2012. What a charming person, brilliant, humble. What could you add to that?
Well, when I was beginning research on my Nephilim series, which was roughly right around 1990, right around there, and I've always been a student of prophecy, but I never really understood what the Nephilim was about. And this was in the nascent beginnings of the Internet. And I remember stumbling on, I would go to this, a friend of mine's computer, which is obviously, this is dial-up, and extremely slow. Probably 94, 95, somewhere in there. I'm not exactly sure of a date, but right around that date, okay? And I'm working on researching this stuff and reading a lot of books, going to the library, ordering ancient texts and tomes that would take a month to get there, and then they would get there, you know, you could only read them in the library, and I'm taking copious notes and, you know, doing research. There was no internet, basically, at that time. And when the internet began, and I was able to hook onto it, I stumbled on this site called Watch Your Website, and lo and behold, it was David Flynn, who had a wealth of information. This was the landing place to go for all things Nephilim and UFO, fallen angels. This man had done his homework. I never met David. We spoke on the phone several times. He gave me a blurb for my last book in the Nephilim trilogy, the Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural book. He, was nice enough to write an endorsement for that. We are going to dedicate Watchers 4 and offer a part of the proceeds of Watchers 4 to his widow and children. We hope it's a lot. We're going to, you know, a percentage of the proceeds from Watchers will go right to David Flynn. And at the very end of the Watchers, we're going to do a special commentary, sort of, just show all of his works and maybe some kind of photo montage. I don't know. We're going to dedicate Watchers 4 to David Flynn.
Oh, excellent. And it was quite a shock hearing of the passing. He was very young. He died of cancer, and what a loss. Now, L.A., I want to turn at this point to your research on implants. And first of all, I want to note that your Cosmic Chess Batch book, and also in your interviews, you do discuss the possibility of the aliens developing an ultimate chip to offer increased longevity and capability, but at a great price. And very powerful. Also here, I'd like to also mention Roger Lear's work, Dr. Lear's, also Daryl Sims, but please start the conversation on this.
Well, it's mind-numbing to think mm-hmm. that we get prophecies written thousands of years ago that tell us that no one, and this is the one everyone knows, no one will be able to buy, sell, or trade without the mark of the beast. Well, what does that mean? What is the mark of the beast? Go back 50 years ago. Go back 35 years ago. And, I mean, what do you mean buy, sell, or trade? That's impossible. How is that ever going to happen? Well, just with the technology that we have now with the computer chips, we realize with the RFID chip that that's not too far off. In fact, recently in India, they're talking about chipping or creating some sort of biometric recognition for a billion people in India. I mean, that's just crazy. That's just off the charts crazy. You know, now everybody's going to be tagged like animals. So it's written 2,000 years ago that when the Antichrist, in this time of 7 years of tribulation, rears his ugly head, that you will not be able to buy, sell, or trade without this mark. But there are other criteria that has been overlooked. And when I heard Dr. Lear discuss the implants, and we talk about this in Watchers 3, and it's in my book, The Cosmic Chess Match, in detail, Dr. Lear discovered that there are nanotubes in these implants that shouldn't be there. That according to Professor Haralick, one of the Torah code, he's actually one of the brilliant mathematician who wrote the software with the algorithm for the Torah codes. The man's just incredible. Certainly the brightest bulb in the room when he's in the room. And he believes that these things may be giving out a clock speed of 300 gigahertz, which in fact is about 100 times faster than the fastest computer that we have. I asked Dr. Lear, what do you think these things are doing? And now, remember, the people who, we're going to try to get into this in Watchers 4, we're actually interviewing Dr. Lear this coming Monday. And we're going to talk about, do some backstory. We're going to try to get some of the people that have had these in, and then Dr. Lear has removed them, because we want to establish the fact that these people were, in fact, abducted against their will. Experimentation was performed on them, usually of a sexual nature. Fluids were taken. Tissue samples were taken. All sorts of probes in every orifice, and I don't need to get graphic. I think you can follow what I'm saying here. And then these implants are put into them. And so going back, and more than likely these people will come on camera with, you know, a bandana, or, you know, we'll black them out, whatever. But they're not looking for notoriety. They just want to be left alone. But it's important for our viewers and for people to understand that there's a link. When we show the chip came from someone. It came from a human being. This is the human being. And this human being, this is his testimony, or his or her testimony, that they were taken against their will. They were paralyzed. Experiments were formed on them. And this chip was put into them. Now, when I asked Dr. Lear, what's it like taking one of these things out? First of all, the body's natural immune system will expunge anything that doesn't belong there. That's what it will do. That's just how it's designed. Not so with these implants. They stay there. The body acts as a host, and for whatever reason, there's like a secretion that goes around the implant that you can't cut with a scalpel, a gray secretion that you cannot cut with a scalpel, and this chip is embedded underneath that. The patients, or the host, I should say, circulatory system and blood and nervous system, essentially power, according to Dr. Lear and others. More than likely, the nervous system empowers it. It's electrical, all right? What's bizarre about this thing, other than the nanotubes, when I asked Dr. Lear, what do you think this thing is doing? And at first, we all thought they were tracking devices. And Dr. Lear just scoffed at that. And he said, tracking devices, baloney. They are changing the person's DNA. That's huge. It's huge for someone like myself who has studied ancient prophetic texts for 30 years, realizing that one of the criteria that we read in the book of Revelation of this mark, this whatever this mark is, that you can't buy, sell, or trade, it's in the back of the hand or on the forehead, okay? Buy, sell, or trade. And by the way, when it talks about the forehead, I know two people who have cut the implants out right at the eyebrow. Two people, by their own hand, cut them out. And the thing fell in the sink. Two people, no collusion between them. They don't know each other. They emailed. One I spoke to face-to-face. The other emailed me. Do you still have it? No, I flushed it down the drain. Unbelievable. So I've got two witnesses. So when it says the back of the hand or in the forehead, there it is. Forehead is, you know, right at the eyebrow. Bingo. And that's where it was. And what's interesting about this, one of the criteria the book of Revelation tells us, I mean, when I say the book of Revelation, it's the last book written 2,000 years ago, guy John on an island of Patmos. It really is called the Apocalypse, which means the unveiling. So when I use these words, if your audience doesn't know, that means apocalypse means unveiling. And unveiling of what? Unveiling of the future. Well, we're here. When you talk about the mark of the beast, I think I've held it in my hand, if I can be so bold as to say that. But the second criteria, other than buy, selling, or trading, is that anyone who takes this thing, grievous sores appear on the body. The third criteria is anyone who takes this thing, there's immediate damnation, dare I use that word on this show, but there's judgment. Well, you say, well, wait a minute, why is there judgment for taking this mark? What can be so bad about it? That gets into the whole Nephilim thing. The only place in the guidebook of the supernatural where this kind of finality happens is with the Nephilim, because the Nephilim are the byproduct, the unholy union between the fallen angels and the women of earth, and they create this chimera, this Nephilim character. We also get a prophecy of the two seeds, the seed of the woman, which the woman doesn't have seed, right? The seed of the woman, men have the seed, they have the eggs. So the seed of the woman will crush your head and you will be, there's the first prophecy. The two seeds, but the serpent seed will also reproduce. And that's what we're looking at. The Nephilim was the seed of the serpent. And it happened not only in Genesis 6, which most people know the flood of Noah, but it's happened, I believe, all throughout history. We can see pockets of this. There are legends in the Americas of giants that might have been 10 to 12 feet tall with red hair and six fingers. Where do they come from? Isn't that interesting? So these things are chimeras. Anyone who takes this chip, their DNA will begin to change. The fourth criteria, which is not directly related, and because their DNA changes, they become Geborim. They become Nephilim, and that's why the judgment is in place. The fourth criteria, which is not directly related to it, but I believe directly through verbiage, but I believe you can make a strong case that it refers to what we're talking about. It says, in those days, the days of this mark, men and women will seek death and not find it. And one of the characteristics of the days of Noah was length of longevity, 500 to 900 years of lifespan. So what if we are told by taking this mark, you will live disease-free for 500? How many people would sign up for that? What's the craze right now all over television? Vampires, right? You know, eternal youth and all that. The movie that came out, the whole thing, it was Time something or other, where, you know, some people in the future look like 25 and they basically live for, you know, 1,000 years or whatever, right? But they always look like they were 25. Scientists know that somehow there's a trigger, there's a switch that causes aging. It shouldn't be there. So what if, let's say, a race of extraterrestrials show up at the end of some sort of a cataclysmic war in the Middle East and say, hey, we created you guys. We seeded you here. We manipulated you deep. We started your Earth civilizations, your religions, your culture. Now we're back at this critical time in your human evolution to usher you into a time of peace, prosperity, and knowledge. And they will give us two things. They will give us this chip, which will extend our lifespan disease-free. Isn't that wonderful? That's what everybody really wants, right? And the second thing, which is even better than that, is a free energy source. The energy that pilots the craft, right, that energy source will be given to the world. It does away with the old system of oil and dependency of oil. All that's just gone. That's why, in my opinion, specifically in the United States and in other countries, the kibosh has been on the whole UFO presence. Because when they show up finally, it's a game changer on so many different levels. Certainly free energy is going to revolutionize this planet in ways that we could never think. But there's a catch to it. And prophecy warns us that what is coming on the earth will deceive even the elect, if that were possible. And I believe this is the coming great deception. I write about this constantly, that this is not E.T. as we think it is. This, in fact, is the last stand, the last cosmic ruse of this cosmic chess match, this great battle that's been waging in another dimension for millennia, and now is now spilling over onto this planet. Many people will be taken in by what I call the coming great deception.
Powerful words. And I just want to make three comments here. One, I wanted to reassure people, and tell me if this is indeed the case. I believe you mentioned it as it, that being the case during your last interview. Many people have unfortunately had implants. It was a horrible transgression of human freedom. But the actual implant that you are theorizing on, and it's a strong argument, has not yet been perfected. So
I agree.
And I wanted to reassure the audience that.
Yes.
Because those people to whom that has been done are the victims.
Yes.
Now, number two, before I get to New York Lily's excellent questions, she was our New York researcher. She's a fine ICAR, fine former ICAR and MUFON researcher,
mm-hmm.
Presently with MUFON. I'll get to her two questions, but right now I just want to quickly answer Tal. Tal was wondering that if men were created in God's image, when was the last time you saw men becoming invisible or whatever? What I'd like to say to Tal was, is that one of the foremost the teachers in the field now in the type of camp that you people are in, appreciating both the physicality and the spiritual aspect, is that per Michael Heiser, God's image can be the right that all humans have to Earth's resources. We were given this heritage. And no one should try to, no alien should try to take Earth's resources from us. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, Dr. Mike Heiser is brilliant. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And he comes up with some very pithy statements, and that certainly is one of them.
And also, you know, if it's a fair exchange, there is that one neutral race that we're researching, or I'm researching, but any type of one-sided, non-reciprocal trade or seeking resources, whether mineral or biological. To me, that's just not acceptable. That's simply my viewpoint. Now, let's get back to the implants. Now, let's see here. She asked a very good question. No, this isn't implant-related. New York Lily's question is, why would a spiritual being, like a fallen one, need a spaceship or to give someone an implant? And my question to you, to dovetail, your comments on in the cosmic chess match was that these beings have full, they're fully capable in both physical and spiritual realms, and that the B'nai Elohim can manifest. They can either be positively talented towards the good or towards the negative. In this case, if they are implanting, if they're implanting such devices in humans, they'd be negative.
Well, absolutely. First of all, that, with all due respect, when you say spiritual beings, and I'll just use one of an author's, which I have not read the book yet, but I'm familiar with it on some level, by Graham Hancock, who talked in his Supernatural book, talks about the end game of these beings are to procreate with us, which is exactly what they did in Genesis 6. If what people don't understand is that angels, when they do appear as men, and they do it all over, all throughout the guidebook of the supernatural. We have one very interesting tale that says that some people have entertained angels unawares. In other words, they've invited them in their homes not realizing that they were angels. When angels appear as themselves, it short circuits out human beings. And this is throughout history. When a real angel appears, you can't stand in their presence. What usually happens is you do a face plant, literally. You just, bam, you're on the ground, and they've got to come over and kind of get you back up. And if you don't believe me, you can read Daniel's account. Sammy literally does a face plant. It's sort of humorous when you read the, you know, the account. You know, we dress it up in religious clothes. You strip all that away, he's basically doing, in modern vernacular, a face plant. That's what the guy's doing. He sees an angel, bam, he does a face plant. The angel has to come over and say, Dan, I'm paraphrasing her, it's okay, sit up, come on. So now Daniel's on his hands and knees. Finally, an angel comes up and he lifts him up on his feet. Daniel is woozy. He can barely stand up. Finally, the angel comes over and goes, Daniel, be of good cheer, and he's speaking life into him. Be of good your strength and courage and all this kind of stuff, right? And finally, Daniel can talk to him. Hooray! All throughout the guidebook of the supernatural, anytime an angel appears, it's the same thing. Everyone gets short-circuited, and, you know, the only way you're going to function with that is when they come over and restore you. Now, think about this. Think about this. Let's look at the abduction phenomena, all right? And let me give you one example. Before I do that, because I think it'll answer it in a very pithy way. That there's a guy called Peter, all right? He's one of the disciples of Yeshua. It's 2,000 years ago. He's arrested. He's in a jail cell. Just dreadful. He's chained to a wall. You know, that's how they, you were arrested, they chained you to a wall. It's just dreadful, okay? So he's sitting in prison. He's chained to a wall. He's in a cell. There's bars in the cell. All of a sudden, an angel appears. Bing! And there's Peter. He's kind of going, oh, my gosh, am I asleep or awake? He's not sure. Note that. Second thing is the angel, without doing anything, appeared in the wall. It appeared in the cell. How did he do that? What's going on? Then what happens is Peter looks down. His chains fall off of him, and the door of the jail cell opens up. So now the angel is manipulating matter in ways that we don't understand. Get this. When Peter gets up and walks out, everyone in the jail has been switched off. They're all sleeping. What does that sound like to you? But this is a good angel because he's, you know, he knows who it is, right? He takes Peter out, courtyard. The huge prison gate opens by itself. He leads Peter out, and then he vanishes. Now, when we look at the modern-day abduction phenomenon, that's a good angel, right? There are certain similarities. When they appear, we are paralyzed. Same thing. We're paralyzed. Can't move. Can't talk. Can't do anything, right? Our eyes move around. That's about it. Feeling of dread, because they are most of the time incredibly malevolent, in my opinion, all right? Then they manipulate matter in ways that we don't know. We're floating over the people who are abducted, I've never been abducted, don't want to be. The people that I've spoken to are now floating above their bed. That's impossible. Their mate, their partner, has been switched off. The dog has been switched off. Everybody's been switched off. You see the similarities? Then time and space are manipulated. They're floated through walls, windows. That can't be. You don't open prison cell doors by themselves. Chains don't fall off. We see the same thing happening with Peter and a good angel as we do in the abduction phenomenon. The same exact thing is happening. Because this is my theory, okay? Because the angels, just like human beings, are endowed with qualities. You know, I can think, I can speak, see, smell, touch, and hear. Okay? Angels can do all that and much, much more. Now, as a human being, I choose to do good. Okay? But there are human beings on this planet, like Adolf Hitler, who didn't choose to do good. And we don't need to get into what Hitler did. We all know what he did. Most of us do anyway, right? God is a monster. Same human being, same brain. He can think, taste, smell. But he used his abilities for evil. Well, it's the same thing with the fallen ones. There's a rebellion that's gone on far, far back in history. Maybe millions of years ago. We don't know how far back it goes, but it goes back. And there was a rebellion. We don't even know what the cause of the rebellion is. We're not told. But a third of the heavenly host went with Lucifer, now called the fallen one, in my opinion. That's what I've named him, the fallen one. But he's got many titles. And what we see is there's a correlation between the abduction phenomena and the good angels. But these are the fallen angels that are manifesting. But it's the same type of stuff that's going on, the same type of supernatural experiences.
Well, you're very, and part of that interruption, you're a very strong proponent of your argument. Now, quick question. I believe it's related to the prior one. New York Lily is referencing, why do they need a spaceship? Would that be... Well, because they're fully physical as well.
What if, and I get into this in the Cosmic Chess Match, and I'm not trying to be glib here, okay? I'm just, and it's kind of a cute answer, tongue in cheek. What if their wings were clipped? And they were. They can no longer roam the way they used to. They no longer have access to the third heaven. They're stuck in the second heaven and the first heaven, which is Earth. The first heaven is Earth. The second heaven is the area outside of Earth. It's another dimension. When someone like, let's say, Edgar Cayce goes to, let's say, the Akashic Record, and it took me a year before I came up with this theory. I mean, I thought long and hard, believe me, before I came up with this. The reason why certain psychics and certain so-called seers like Nostradamus and Edgar Cayce can allegedly see into the future is because the second heaven has different time-space properties than we do in the first heaven. The analogy I came up with is the cornfield analogy, and it's this. As human beings, we are stuck in a cornfield. The corn is 8 feet tall. Guess what? We see right the corn right in front of us. That's it. That's all we see. And that's analogous to the time-space continuum where time moves in a linear fashion, always forward, 1 second at a time. Oops, the past was just my last words. Now we're in the future, or we're in the present, I should say, always moving into the future. And where is the present? The present's always moving, so we can never really... So we're stuck in the space-time continuum, which time moves in a linear fashion, a second by second by second by second. The fallen one pulls up into the cornfield in a red fire truck. And it's got a big second two-story extension ladder. He reels that baby up, climbs to the top of the two-story extension ladder. Guess what? His view of the cornfield is not only that cornfield, but he can see a few cornfields all around him, right? So his view, that's analogous to his view of space-time, is completely different than ours. He can see through time further than we can. But because time is changing, right? He's not sure which one is actually what's going to come down. And he's certainly not exhaustive. But this enables certain seers that tap into the second heaven, which is where he resides, to see through time. Get this. The Most High God is in the space shuttle with the telescopic lens. He can see the dime that just fell out of my pocket in the cornfield, but he can zoom that baby back and see not only the cornfield, but the entire city, the county, the state, the United States of America, the state of Kansas, the United States of America, the globe, the galaxy, the universe, bam, and he sees all of time from beginning to end simultaneously. For him, he accesses all points in the space-time continuum simultaneously. In fact, he dwells outside of space-time. Now, here's the text which blew. And, you know, some people probably heard this stuff on Sunday school, and they go, you know, yawn, right? But Yeshua is taken up, Jesus, Yeshua is taken up by the fallen one when he's being tempted for 40 days. He's been fasting for 40 days, okay? There's a sword match going on. You want to talk about a cosmic chess match? There's a battle of wits that's going on here. Kind of like the Princess Bride, you know, that whole deal. The same thing, you know. See if you can choose the cup which is in front of you. So they're doing, I'm making lighter, but they're definitely battling. And the fallen one takes him, according to the text, to a high place, a high mountain place. Isn't that interesting? And it says in the text, in a moment of time, shows him all the kingdoms of the world, in a moment of time, and offers it to him, if you only fall down and worship him. What we don't understand is that's literal. That is literal. That really happened. Why? Because the fallen one, he's outside of the space-time continuum as we know it. So he can see to the future further than man can. But he's not all-knowing. And so when he offers the kingdoms of the world, he's really doing that. They're his to offer. He is the prince of this world, at least right now. He's about to be deposed. Can't wait till that happens. So I hope that answers some of what we see and what is going on and how the time-space thing is completely different. The time-space relationship is different on Earth, second heaven, third heaven.
No, you gave a very careful explanation, and if I remember correctly, if you just inform me whether my understanding is correct here, that you believe that the B'nai Elohim, who can be either to the positive or negative.
Yeah.
Of course, I myself tend to believe in the full spectrum of beings in the universe, but you make powerful arguments there. And you're saying that the B'nai Elohim would have further time movement capabilities than humans, but it's only the Creator who a priori knows everything and who can actually work outside of time.
And this is why...
Strong argument. Mm-hmm.
Well, and he says this. I mean, he says, I am God and God alone. There's no one but me. And I alone can call out the end before the beginning and the beginning before the end. And that's why the prophecy in the guidebook of the supernatural usurps all of the prophecies. It stands head and shoulders. food is above those for Donna Sikakasi, the Mayans, everything, the Bhagavad Gita. I mean, there's nothing that holds even a candle to it. And I'm not saying this from some standpoint of religious fervor. Do your homework. When you call out with great specificity that in the latter days I will regather you from the four corners of the earth and reestablish you in your ancient homeland, speaking of Israel, there it is. And that's a twofer prophecy, because not only did that happen, but the time of the Gentiles controlling Jerusalem ended in 1967. Yet another prophecy. They all dovetail together. The desert blooms, it falls, the language is restored. I mean, it goes on and on and on. Obviously, somebody is outside of space-time. And again, I'm not, you know, people get me confused sometimes, and they go, well, it sounds religious. No, you don't understand. Man has made this thing into a religion. And they've obfuscated the wonderful clarity, the simplicity of the message that's written right there. All you got to do is pick the thing up and read it, you know. It's right there. And the bottom line is that when the Most High God says, I alone am God and no other one exists but me, who calls out the end before the beginning, and that's his signature. And so when he writes prophecy and he uses men to do it, it's always 100% accurate 100% of the time. And this is why the fallen one is constantly attacking the prophecy. If he can just make one fail, Most High God is a liar, can't trust him. That's what's at stake. So if he can kill the, follow me here, if he can wipe out every Jew on the planet, Ezekiel 37, which is the regathering of the Jews in their ancient homeland, will never happen. And Jerusalem, which will be trodden over by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles, non-Jewish people, is over, that prophecy will never be fulfilled. God's a liar, can't trust him. That is what is at stake. And this goes back with the Jewish people for millennia. Think of Moses. Most people don't realize that Moses, you know, he's an Israeli baby, but the reason why Pharaoh finds him is because he's put in a basket. Why? Because Pharaoh was given a decree to kill all the male Jewish babies. Why is that there? See, the genocide is there. Think of, we're about to celebrate Purim here, right? Mm-hmm. Think of Esther, all right, and Haman. And what was the decree that came out in the time of Esther? To wipe out and kill all the Jews again. Why is this happening century after century? Why does Hitler want to kill all the Jews? Why do they want to kill all the Jews now, like Khomeini, right? It's the same thing. You're being fueled by supernatural elements, because because the fallen one truly believes that somehow he can do this, he can win. He can still win. Somehow he can win. He can prove the Most High God's a liar, as checkmate. But that's not going to happen. Trust me. In the meantime, had Hitler won, and thank God he didn't, there'd be no Jew left on this planet. I guarantee it. The Third Reich would have hunted them down and wiped them out, just like they did all throughout Germany and Eastern Europe and France and every place else that went. That's what would have happened. There'd be no Jew left, and we must feel today. And in the eyes of those like Khomeini, that's a good thing. To me, it's absolutely horrific.
Powerful, very, very powerful argument elements there. At this point, L.A., my final question, and it's one that I very much wanted to mention here. There are two or three people, I believe, still in the room, I won't give their names, who believe they've heard very unusual noises in the environment. One from the state of New York, one from the state of West Virginia, and I believe the third from Alabama. What do you think of those unusual sounds being heard now?
Do me a favor, please. Please shoot me an email with that, if you can, to la@lamarzulli.net. That is la@lamarzulli.net. la@lamarzulli.net. Mm-hmm. We've been exploring this. Some of them are a hoax.
Hoaxes, right. Uh-huh.
We know the hoaxes, but we're also getting reports. I got one from a person in Texas 2 days ago. He sent me the clip done on a cell phone. He knows the person, knows both of these guys real well, about an hour from his house. He believes it was not a hoax. People are hearing this stuff all over the place. I, in my opinion, and look, this is just my opinion. I don't know. We're trying to get to a lot of it. And some of it has been proven to be an absolute hoax, okay? Like, for instance, in Watchers 3, we show a baseball game with the Manta Rays, whatever team it was. I don't follow baseball. But they're in an enclosed dome, and lightning strikes the dome and shorts out the PA system, and it creates this like wind sound, and it sounds very supernatural. In fact, the announcer goes, "Wow, that sound, what is that? That sounds supernatural," something like that. And at the we later vetted that, and we on the bottom of that there's a caption. You know, later we realized that it was lightning struck the dome and it was in the PA system. Okay. We get it. So some of these things we're able to vet and understand. Others we are not able to vet, and they seem like something is going on. Could it be that the veil that separates the second heaven from this heaven is beginning to thin, very much so, and that when people talk about the return of Quetzalcoatl, the plumed serpent god, gee, I wonder who that is. This is not a benevolent entity. Remember, any culture that sacrifices 75,000 people ritualistically, just go there. That's all you need to do. Just go there. That's their fingerprint. That's who they are. That's their ethos. We're going to sacrifice 70,000 people. That's not a good thing, especially if you're being, you know, flayed alive. That's not a good thing. And so that's what these people did. That calendar came from a source outside of the Maya. The Maya had nothing to do with that. They were the recipients of it. Read the Book of Enoch, found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, a pseudepigraphical book quoted in both the Tanakh and the New Testament, found in the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Book of Enoch talks about the fallen angels coming to Earth. Right, not only taking the women of Earth and having sex with them, and the Nephilim being born. Well, gee, what does that sound like? Sounds exactly like the abduction phenomena, very similar to it. Creating a hybrid race. Isn't that interesting, Dr. Jacobs? You know, we've talked about this stuff. But what's interesting is they also gave knowledge to primitive man. They show him the art of weapon making. They actually showed how to kill the fetus in the womb, which is basically the first abortion ever recorded. There it is, from a fallen one. So the roots of abortion, you can make a strong case, actually go back to the fallen angels. That's where the first one is recorded, to my knowledge. There it is. That might wrinkle some feathers. In some ways, I hope it does, because I believe that what it is ritualistic sacrifice. And I realize when I say that, people go, wait a minute, but doctors aren't Satanists. I know they're not. I get that. But what can be more innocent than a child, an unborn child in a mother's womb? There's nothing. And to rip that thing and destroy that life at any time, for any reason, in my opinion, is murder. And I realize it's an extremely hot-button issue, controversial. I'm sure there are listeners out there who have had abortions. And look, the whole thing is this: forgiveness for everything. We're human beings. We blow it. We all blow it, all of us. So I'm not condemning anybody or judging anybody. I'm just saying that's what it is. Most people don't understand that that's what it is. With 1 billion abortions on this planet, in my opinion, that is a holocaust, which is just beyond the pale. Never in human history have we had anything like that. But I digress. The bottom line is that we are at war, and this cosmic chess match is spilling out onto this planet, and that some of these sounds may, in fact, be some of what we're, in other words, the veil is beginning to thin. The fallen ones are beginning to manifest. And I know I interviewed Peter Davenport for my news, will come out in a few days, hopefully. And I gotta finish it up. And you know, Davenport said that look, we had such an increase of UFOs in the last couple of months. He's astounded by it. I mean, it's just they're up like 30%, 40%, 50% in some places. Sightings from all over the world. So things are happening: earthquakes, volcanic activity, floods, rumors of war, famines, pestilence, all the things that we see. There was a cold spell. You know, what, 75 people died in Eastern Europe because of the cold spell? I mean, yeah, what's going on here?
Some major events, and I wanted to note as well that at your website, lamarzulli.net, you can find details on your newsletter that we publish in a few days, also on your weekly program. Is it the Acceleration Program, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Pacific? Is that
correct? Yeah, I got to take that down. It used to be Acceleration Radio. We stopped doing it for about 3 months now. I'm looking for another place. Patrice, let me know what you're tied into. Maybe UFO Paranormal Radio. Maybe I should talk to Joe Montalto and try to come on there or something. I don't know. But we're looking for another home, and we just haven't done anything yet. And frankly, with Watchers 3 or Watchers series, it takes up a lot of time.
Well, I'll tell you, the Watcher DVD, when I saw the Watcher DVDs, the trilogy there. Very intriguing. And you said there's a Watchers 4 right now in the middle.
We are doing it. Yep, we're in production.
And your books, your several books, are very, very intriguing reads. And I appreciate your research and your work and your stopping by this evening. Hope you'll be a return guest in the near future.
I'd love to, Patrice, anytime.
Excellent. And we also want to thank our listeners this evening. Thanks for the great questions and comments in the chat room. We appreciate you being there. And also, before we leave, I just wanted to note for our listeners to make sure to listen to the other excellent programs on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network, such as UFO Undercover with host Joe Montaldo on Wednesday evenings, 8 to 10 Eastern. And, of course, Second Sight New York City, Second Sight NYC with Chris George and Stephanie Benetti, Thursday evenings from 8 to 10 Eastern. Wonderful weekend, everyone. Thank you again, L.A., and thanks, everyone, for joining us.
My pleasure, Patrice. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. Thanks for joining us this evening on Global Focus with guest L.A. Marzulli with website at lamarzulli.net. We appreciate your time with us. Have a great weekend.
By February the 6th, because February the 6th is the absolute drop-dead date when winter is just really set in, and you've got to be hunkered down in some warm place for the Antarctic winter. Vostok is the place on the planet that has recorded the lowest temperature on record. I think it's minus 129 degrees. And so winter is not a joke there. Winter is very, very serious there. 6 days ago was the last time anybody heard.